So step one would be to play with the belief system, with the belief that consciousness is universal, not individual. And then sooner or later, step two would be dealing with fear of death or death.
No, when you discover the true nature of consciousness, the fear of death disappears. The fear of death exists only if there is this feeling that I am a separate consciousness. So the disappearance of a fear of death is the direct consequence or the direct effect of an insight of the true nature of consciousness, of its universal and eternal nature. And that could be called awakening or a glimpse of truth. And then, subsequently, there is a stabilization process in this happiness. The end game is happiness, is to be happy all the time, to be at peace and happy all the time. The first glimpse of truth, although it removes once and for all the existential fear, doesn't instantaneously remove all these traces in the body. In Sanskrit they call those the vasanas, that are the leftover of ignorance, both in the body as feeling systems and in the mind as belief systems. It takes time for these to dissolve, and as they dissolve, the relapses in ignorance become less and less frequent and of shorter and shorter duration. So it's like moving from a sky which is covered by clouds all the time, then you have a sky, you see a little piece of blue, and then you know that there is blue behind, and you end up in South California, and it's blue all the time. You see, so there is a huge difference between a sky which is blue all the time, if from time to time, once upon a week, you have a little white cloud that crosses it.
Yes.
And the sky which is always covered, and once upon a time, you have a little piece of blue that appears.
That's a big difference, yes.
Big difference.
Typically, in your experience, how long would such processes take then after the glimpse?
It varies on how strong the glimpse was, the kind of thickness of the vasanas, and how strong the desire for ultimate liberation is, for self-realization, which is for this happiness, is. In my case, the desire was very strong, and the vasanas were relatively strong also. After 2 years, I was much better off. After 5 years, I was good, I was happy. But this happiness increases all the time, you see. It's not like it stops. It's like a crescendo in a symphony, in a Bruckner symphony, you know. It goes always, and you think it's over. No, there is one more revelation behind, because it's alive. It's not like you reach a plateau and poof. No, it's a constant revelation of beauty, of...
Somehow it seems like in the beginning there is a narrow understanding of oneself, and this is expanding all the time with looking deeper into the joy
expands with that. It's just that some moment, imagine you walk on a road, and at some point walking on this road, you have left misery behind.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps in hindsight, you don't remember where on the road misery has been left behind. But now you are walking, and you are just happy and free walking on this road. But on this road, the landscape is always different and is growing more and more beautiful. You see, so that's the metaphor I would be using. Mm-hmm. At some point, you have left misery behind you.
Now, in my case, I had some phases of extreme bliss situations, and there was one point where I could not stand it, too much bliss, so I tried to get rid of that one, and somehow seemed to have succeeded. I saw that this bliss was created by a belief that was held that I have not deserved this, and when this seeing happened, then peace came, and silence, and a silent joy remained.
Often this attachment to bliss, there is something to it which is of the nature of the body attached to it. There is a bodily sensation attached to the bliss. They call it in Sanskrit anandamaya kosha, which is the illusion, the sheath of the illusion of bliss. This as we get established in peace and happiness, these samadhis, these blissful states, they kind of disappear naturally because everything is perfect. You see what I mean? Everything is just perfection. It's not like smoking a big joint, you know.
It's more like letting go any beliefs of limitation or imperfection, something like that, just relaxing into this.
Yes.
Be with this, somehow, without ideas of resistance and limitations. That's what's triggered here now, yeah?
But we are this, and it's so perfect and beautiful that...
It's just a relaxed being. It's beautiful, relaxed. Natural, scientifically talking, it seems that there is some built-in bottom line of joy in these bodies, and that shines through eventually. If I would put it in words of natural sciences, on a body level, but it's much bigger.
Do you still work as a physicist?
No, I never worked as a physicist. I work in industry as a business developer, and I did commissioning works, industrial stuff. Physics helped me with the philosophy side. Since quantum physics and theory of relativity, this intuitive day-to-day experience really got questioned.
It's beautiful. I use it because I use physics sometimes, I mean modern physics, to show that our view of the world, I mean the common view of the world of 99% of mankind, is ridiculously conventional and small compared to the view of physics.
Yes, it is.
So the physics helps us in a sense thinking out of the box of our narrow concept about the world. Because our concept, they are the concepts of the caveman, you know. They have not evolved since then. And physics has evolved. And when you see the nature of space and time in the general theory of relativity and mass and energy, and when you see in quantum physics, in quantum mechanics, this understanding that which we perceive, it's just the interaction with the physical universe and the perceiving apparatus, but the physical universe in the absence of being perceived, is in a state of superimposition of all the possibilities.
Sorry, I got to disturb here. Sorry.
Your kid is sick.
Yeah, she was sick yesterday, and so I picked her up and helped her, and tonight I will pick her up again. She comes later with the bus. She doesn't feel so well, so I will pick her up. But coming back to that physics, I did not get all of the sentences you said.
What I was saying is that in the world which we see through quantum mechanics is very different than from our common view of the world, which is the view of a solid world existing no matter whether we perceive it or not, whereas in quantum mechanics it is the measuring, which means the observation of a system that in fact forces the system to show its true color, and that in the absence of such a measurement, the system is in a kind of a limbo state of superimposition of the various eigenvalues of the observables, right? And that it is only when you make a measurement of the spin of the electron that it is going to tell us plus one half or negative one half.
Exactly.
And in between it is spinning from both sides, I mean, in both directions. I mean, it's...
it's not really intuitive. Huh? Yeah, but I brought it down to also to this, everything is connected. Yeah, this is apparent as in theory of relativity as well as in quantum mechanics. Huh? So from both ends, the pointer is to there is no separation, basically. Everything is connected. Perception is connected with the phenomenon, and the other way around. And through gravity, the whole universe is connected,
But even in classical physics, when you think about it, everything is connected since the laws are universal. Since everything in the universe is subjected to the same laws, there is a connection there, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, if there was no connection, there would be a law here and a law there, like there is a law in Germany, and there is a different law in Syria. You see, so...
even there, even there, subject to apparent laws, which we don't understand really, but we have ideas of it, best guesses. I would challenge you on this philosophy a little bit. Yeah, philosophizing is nice, but what I experience, my experience is philosophy usually uses language, and language by itself has many elements of separation and unclarities. But I would recommend is just sensing and perceiving beyond words in meditation or so. I think there deeper insights are more probable. Otherwise, there is too much distraction and confusion by using words when philosophizing. So in the fundamentally, we are the same. We're saying the same. You say you have to take the body into these processes.
But also, you know, when I was 18, and I had my first, just before the baccalaureate, the French abitur, we had a 1 year philosophy, and I was very disappointed because upon reading the philosopher, you know, Sartre and so on, I was under the impression that thought could never reach reality, that reality was on this plane and that thinking was on the parallel plane, and they would never connect. So whatever, so that thought will never reach reality. And in fact, I was proven wrong perhaps 8-10 years later when I had this transformative experience first through reading the books of Krishnamurti, but then most importantly being with my teacher. And the reason is this, is that not all words reach their referent, which is the object they refer to. For instance, the word table is not going at the end of the word table. You are not going to have a table.
Yes.
So, usually words don't deliver the object they refer to.
Words are not the things, yeah.
But there is an exception to this rule. And the exception is the word consciousness or I. Because the word consciousness, it appears in consciousness. It is like an island, the word, in a notion of consciousness. So when the island vanishes under sea, what remains is consciousness. So the word consciousness has a different quality because it takes us to the experience of consciousness, and the word I is the same. That's why sages such as Ramana Maharshi would recommend the self-inquiry, and that's why it is an effective method, because when we think I appears in the real I. Therefore, the word I points to what, not only points towards its own referent, but delivers it. As I vanishes, consciousness, which is the nature, the substance of I, remains. So there is a path that goes through thought, but there is a path that goes through feeling, and there is a path that goes through perception, and eventually we need the three paths. No one is better than the other, because the sage at Mananda Krishna Menon said once, you shouldn't stop the search until you have reached the goal. And the goal is when the thought doesn't take you away, when the feeling doesn't take you away, and when the sense perception doesn't take you away. So you need to have found the truth on those three levels and to be establishing it on those three levels. And they are all important. That's why thinking is important. You cannot say the mind is useless, thinking is useless, because it is useful in pointing to presence, and it is useful also in deconstructing the belief system that the mind itself has built as it was working as the slave of ignorance. And now, as the servant of the absolute, as the servant of liberation, it can deconstruct the big building of belief system that it has built. So it fulfills a mission in that sense in the liberation process. But it is not sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the in Plato's Academia, that is little known, but they used to teach philosophy, of course, but they were teaching also something else. They called it gymnosophia.
Mm-hmm.
And it was some kind of yoga, science of the body. Of course, they don't tell you that in the universities. But these ancient masters, they knew that thinking was not sufficient, but that meditation and feeling and perceiving had to be invited to the party.
Yeah, it is an integration of all the aspects, all this oneness to pervade all aspects. The illusion has to fall in all aspects. Right?
Exactly.
And
just also as our life was previously compartmentalized, that we have our friends, we had our family, we had our job, we had our private. In fact, you realize that all of that dissolves, all these separations dissolve.
Yeah.
Everything is integrated.
The belief that it could not be that way falls away. The belief that something is missing falls away. Even all beliefs fall away. It's not unity and it's not separation. It's beyond both.
All the questions fall away. Because the mind is satisfied. And that's something very new, a mind which has no questions. And not because the mind could formulate an answer, because the answer cannot be formulated, because it's a living answer. We are the answer. Yeah. But nevertheless, the mind is satisfied by the answer we are, and the mind has no more questions. And then as a result, the mind is peaceful. The mind is
satisfied, rests.
Satisfied, and it is not a mind which is not active, because you can do work with your computer, you can answer questions, you can play tennis, you can do all kinds of things, or play music. But the mind is happy, is satisfied. There is no agitation. Everything is flowing.
Yes, no problem. There are no heavy stuff, no loads.
No agitation.
No agitation, yeah. It's just... But it can be used, so nothing is lost. Nothing is lost.
And in parallel, the body also is relaxed.
Yes.
So no tensions, no unnecessary tensions. The body is transparent. The body is not felt like being here, but the body is, as we were saying earlier, is felt in its limitlessness.
There's no limitations and there is no contractions. So what That's interesting that we come to that point. During a meditation retreat, I had some glimpse that was one would probably call it mystical experience, but it was a deep experience. And since then, these contractions in the body, which happened during the meditations, they just disappeared and never came back. That's just an example for what you said.
It's a body which is perhaps like the body of a newborn child, you know, before you have identified with the body. The body is not felt. It's a universe which is your body. I had this story of someone having a spiritual awakening. He went to the woods in the afternoon, and he had a siesta. And as he woke up, in line with his two legs were two fallen trees, two fallen pine trees, long trees. And his first impression was that these were also his legs. And then he realized, yes, it's a true thing. It is as much my legs as these, because I am the universe, I am the world. The world is my extended body. Because, as universal consciousness, consciousness is universal. The world is my extended body.
It cannot be other than that. It is it's a physical expression of mirroring of that.
But it is important that the body, if you will, that the way we think, the way we feel, the way we perceive, be in line with conscious, with our experience, our glimpse of consciousness being universal. You see? So there is a realignment of the way we think, of the way we feel, of the way we perceive, so that we will feel, think, and perceive in a way which is consistent with universal consciousness and no longer consistent with personal consciousness.
Yes. It's just a different operating mode somehow. I don't know how to express it. As you suggested, you lived 40 years in the assumption that consciousness is individualized. Now play with the other way around, and then this happens automatically.
Okay, Reingold,
I think we are done for this time. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. It was sweet meeting you.